This is A Sustainable Mind, episode 84. Today's episode is brought to you by Novak Hair Studios. Novak Studios is a zero-waste salon in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and is a certified Green Circle salon, which means that they collect, recycle, and repurpose salon waste of all kinds, and they are also taking measures on many other fronts to be able to bring more sustainable hair care services to their clients. In episode 83, the founder, Ben Hudgens, shares with us how he came to be inspired to start his own salon, and we also chat about what it's like to run a sustainable business in an industry where it's not always easy to know exactly how to be more environmentally conscious. You can learn more about Novak Studios at novakstudios.com. That's N-O-V-A-K studios.com. If you would like to sponsor A Sustainable Mind, we would love your support. I was actually approached by a company just a few weeks ago that wanted to partner with us as a sponsor. After a couple of weeks of conversations and doing a lot of digging on my own, I was actually really disappointed to find that this company that I was previously excited to chat with was not only doing a tremendous disservice to many of their customers that were having terrible experiences, but also their client support team was ineffective and dismissive. While I was not able to back up some of the claims that I'd heard about them not fully following through on their promises as far as environmental sustainability goes, it was enough for me that they were not doing right by their clients. It can be a minefield out there to vet companies, test products and services, have conversations with those running the company or the founders, enough to know not only where their heart is, but also to see if they're making good on their promises as it relates to environmental impact. No company is perfect, nor am I, but I want to be as thorough as possible when it comes to bringing you all companies that are doing good out in the world. And that includes them hopefully being honest about the impact that that company is having in their communities, on the environment, and in what they're delivering to their customers. If a company that you founded or are affiliated with would be a good partner for us, or if you're a customer of a brand that you love and trust, head on over to asustainablemind.com/sponsor, or just send us a DM on Twitter or Instagram. We would love to hear from you. Welcome to A Sustainable Mind, where we delve into the minds behind today's most impactful environmental campaigns, organizations, and startups, inspiring the environmental changemakers of tomorrow. I'm your host, Marjorie Alexander. Not long after Emily O'Brien graduated from the NYU Tisch Film Program, she landed her first job as Green Steward with Big Beach Films in 2011. Since her first days in production, she knew there was a way for the role of sustainability on set to go far beyond basic waste management and recycling. Her early years of dedication to green practices and passion for the environment on set is what earned her the nickname Earth Angel from fellow cast members and crew. To this day, it's still what production colleagues tend to call her when she's on set. By 2013, Emily founded Earth Angel and turned it into a scalable model that she has since inspired the entertainment industry with and significantly reduced its environmental impact. Earth Angel has helped films and series avoid 8,500 metric tons of greenhouse gases, divert over 4,800 tons of waste, and donated 125,000 meals to local communities. Their client rosters include The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Spielberg's The Post, Emmy Award winner The Marvelous Miss Maisel, and Lin-Manuel Miranda's In the Heights. Earth Angel is headquartered in New York with offices in Los Angeles and Atlanta. Emily, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Absolutely. So, for those listening that have heard kind of my origin story, how I came to sustainability, it actually originated in film. I was a filmmaker for many years. I moved out to Los Angeles to work in the film industry. And one thing that really disturbed me was the amount of waste that was produced on set, whether it came to, you know, craft services or the set itself, you know, building and then oftentimes completely tearing down and then just throwing an entire set in the dumpster instead of repurposing it and reusing it on other sets. was something that really, really disturbed me for years. And I finally just couldn't take it anymore. And I kind of, you know, exited the industry. But you really found purpose in seeing an opportunity where you could help make these productions a lot more sustainable. Tell us a little bit more about your transition from film school into the film industry, some of your those moments where you were like, it doesn't really have to be this way, and what you wound up doing about it.
Sure, absolutely. So my whole impetus to study film and you know pursue my degree at Tisch was about wanting to create socially and environmentally conscious content. Like I knew that this was a very powerful medium that could help accelerate change and, you know, influence behavior. And then it wasn't until I actually graduated the program, I was working at Focus Features at the time, back when they were headquartered in New York. And I was tasked with managing their Focused on Green initiative. And it was the first time it dawned on me that there was this intersection between creating content and entertainment and reducing environmental impact, you know? And so I just started doing all this research. I learned that the Producers Guild of America had started this green committee and they were forming best practices. And some of the larger Hollywood studios had hired corporate sustainability representatives. It was just really this nascent stage of our industry kind of formulating what green production is. Mm-hmm. And it was around that time I wandered into this panel discussion at this incredible prop house reuse center that used to be in Gowanus, Brooklyn, called Film Biz Recycling. And this discussion was all about the rise of the environmental steward on set and how there were a select number of kind of Hollywood productions that were willing to hire people to work with the production crew to, you know, implement zero waste policies and reduce the impact. And I just immediately thought, how do I do this? Where do I sign up? You know? Nice. And it was really challenging because there wasn't really any protocols around this. But I basically went back to my colleagues at Focus Features and just started asking around, like, would anyone be willing to hire me to do this? And that was when I was very fortunately connected to Peter Seraf of Big Beach Films, who's a very big proponent of, you know, environmental reduction and you know impact reduction in the entertainment world. And he was willing to take a risk on me. And he said, sure, I'm going to hire you and see what you can do on this production. And then it was just a word of mouth situation from there. Producers just started calling me and saying, I heard what you did on this set. Can you do it on my set? And it just kind of grew from there.
That's really, really fantastic. And I'm so happy that the industry has moved in that direction. When I got to Los Angeles in 2007, that was nowhere in sight. As far as I could tell, no one cared about that stuff at all. But I also did not work on larger union films that were maybe a little more slow paced, and you weren't trying to, like, you know, squeeze an entire feature film into a 4-week shooting period and everyone's working like 16 to 18 hour days. So maybe that was kind of a little bit of the difference. But for those that aren't familiar with what the film industry looks like behind the scenes, can you give them a quick little description of what a typical day would be? And then what are some of the things that traditionally wouldn't necessarily be sustainable? And some of those changes that you have made on productions over the years to make them a lot more earth friendly?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah. So the way I often describe it to folks who aren't familiar with working in production is that in a way, we're kind of this intersection of a lot of industries, mm-hmm. you know, so we're this little like microcosm hive of all these people working in different capacities. So, you know, we have construction departments that are the ones that build these, you know, big, beautiful sets that we film in. We have our electric departments that power the sets, you know, and get all the, you know, lighting and figure out how we're going to design the lighting and so forth. We have our catering and craft service departments that are there to feed and nourish and make sure these people who are working 18 hour days are fed and happy, right? And all these other sort of creative elements, hair and makeup, costumes. So it's a lot of different activity happening all at the same time. It's sort of like organized chaos mm-hmm. is the best way to really describe it. And so, you know, and working in New York primarily, I think there's an added layer of chaos at times too. You know, we're shooting in on city streets and we have to like lock up pedestrians so they don't walk into the shot. And it's just sort of like logistical, you know, orchestration like you would never believe, you know. Mm-hmm. And I'm always in awe of what production managers and assistant directors can achieve in terms of what we get on screen and what it takes. So yeah, it's a takes a village situation. And because of that, my role in sustainability means I have to be knowledgeable of all of those different industry intersections, if you will. So when we're talking to construction departments, we need to talk about, okay, well, how are we going to source FSC certified lumber so that we're not contributing towards deforestation while we're making this film, right? Mm-hmm. Or when we're talking to catering, you know, how are we going to eliminate single-use plastics while also filming in the middle of the field, in the middle of nowhere, where we don't have access to commercial kitchens and some of the other, you know, things that you would normally have access to. So there's a lot of different things that are tailored to each department. But I would say for the most part, the major kind of contributors towards a production's footprint tend to be transportation and our fuel consumption, because we are a traveling circus essentially. And certainly pre-COVID, we had production crews flying all over the world, you know, multiple units being filmed in different countries often. And then just like the trucks that it takes to get the equipment and the people and the supplies everywhere they need to be, not to mention the energy that it takes to power these sets. Mm-hmm. And then just all the waste as a result. You know, these sets that we build are not built to last. You know, they're built for a very finite period of time, you know, and flyaway walls so that you can readily put in a camera where, you know, there was a wall in that previous shot. You know, it's not, there isn't a durability factor to it all. So all of these create very, very unique challenges for sustainability.
Absolutely. And something that you kind of touched on a little bit there, which is my favorite part of filmmaking, is that I always called it a team sport. You know, mm-hmm. it takes hundreds of people sometimes over the course of months, and sometimes, depending on the movie, a couple of years to really bring a single feature film to life or a documentary. Do you find that the crew and the cast on set really take these changes? For instance, craft services, that's probably something that, for instance, a cast member might notice very easily because they're not necessarily doing the behind the scenes stuff. They're on camera. And so with what you do, that might be one of the biggest ways that they're impacted or that they see a difference, is like the different utensils and the flatware. So those are some changes that they may see. It's not plastic now, it's, you know, metal utensils that are cleaned and then reused after every single meal. Do you find that the cast and crew is very receptive to these changes? What's their reaction? And how do they talk to you about it? Is it something that surprises them? What's their reaction to you?
You know, it definitely has, the level of receptiveness has increased over the years. Mm-hmm. I will say that much.
I bet.
when I started doing this 10 years ago, you know, there was a lot of, you know, why is this my problem? You know, I'm here to make a film. I'm not here to save the planet. Like why, you know, what's going on here? You know, so we were met with resistance to a certain extent, but then there were also folks who were just overwhelmed and, you know, overwhelmingly grateful that someone was now paying attention to this, because like you, it has really bothered a lot of people for a lot of years. And I think nobody really felt empowered to speak up, that they could do anything about it. You know, there's a real sort of like hierarchical culture within the industry too, that it's like, whatever the creatives say goes, and it's, you can't sort of, you know, go against that. And so, you know, there's just a lot of sort of like just cultural elements that I think made it challenging for people as well. But I think, like I said, you know, we have also gotten a lot of incredible support, you know, actors who have really come to appreciate the work we do. That's how we started our ambassador program for talent who are just so energized and motivated by what we were doing. We were like, tell other people that they can green their sets too, please. Like, this is very important that other people know that this exists. And at the end of the day, filmmakers and all of the craftsmen and women who are a part of the filmmaking process are just like these incredibly creative, talented individuals. Mm-hmm. You know, like we essentially directors and producers kind of lay out their vision for a project, and then it's up to these craftspeople to execute it. So, you know, people sort of relish also, like there's no task that's too challenging, right? Like we make it snow in the summer and we do all types of really exciting things. We also try to put this in perspective and say, well, shooting sustainably, you know, is also part of these challenges, right? Like it's no different. And so by meeting people where they are, understanding, you know, the limitations, because everyone has very, very real limitations when it comes to like their budgets, their time constraints, et cetera, and really just starting to implement things in a way that we aren't preaching, we aren't giving a sort of top-down this prescriptive approach, but rather really working alongside them to troubleshoot or trial new products or new methods, and people really respond well to that.
Excellent, excellent. I want to talk now about the process. So if I'm a filmmaker, if I'm, you know, embarking on a new shoot, say in 3 months, and I'm just now hearing this episode, I'm a smaller production, so it's not maybe as large of a cast and crew, maybe not as many moving pieces. And so 3 months is plenty of time. When I come to you to work with you, what's the process of getting me in the door, figuring out logistics? What exactly does that look like?
Sure. 3 months. Oh, what a dream. I wish everyone came to us.
People out. Come to you like less than 3 months out and they're like huge productions?
Absolutely. Oh, all the time. Gosh, people, all the time.
You gotta get on there.
Sometimes so people are like, all you guys need is like 2 weeks, right? And we're
geez. Yeah. Yeah. Because there's so much, you know, like building the set, and there's so many things that the sourcing has to be figured out. Like you said, you know, building sets with sustainable lumber, that's something that has to happen like weeks and months ahead of time.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Go ahead.
So, the first thing we do is we encourage being brought on as early as possible, you know, and a lot of our productions get that and understand that. And we are able to work with folks early on, which is fantastic. And our model, the way we describe it is, we call it the four S's. So when people ask us, how do you make sets sustainable? We say we provide the strategy, the staff, the stuff, and the stats to shoot sustainably. And so that is, I have different people within Earth Angel who kind of lead each of those S's. And then we have coordinators and what we call our eco PAs who work on the ground, you know, with the shooting crew day to day. So kind of filter all of that knowledge from our different S's, if you will, into each of the productions. So, you know, we start early on with having meetings with all the department heads and understanding where are they at. Maybe some people are really familiar with sustainable practices and are already implementing things. Great. We don't need to waste our time on X, Y, and Z. Like, we need to focus on A, B, and C instead. We make sure we speak with the producers about like what their goals are, where, because a lot of times we do sort of need the above the line buy-in, if you will, to really kind of push for elements. So we ask, like, how far are you willing to go on something like a Meatless Mondays? You know, like that's a controversial topic. We want to feel out where people stand. We start to set up all of the reporting and analytics frameworks. So we do that largely with the accounting departments on every production, because they're the ones getting tallies for how much fuel we have purchased to date and, you know, our utility bills, et cetera. So we get in alignment so that we can easily do the carbon footprint assessment at the end. And then we start to do all of our sourcing and procurement analysis. So maybe they are set up to do, you know, reusable utensils and we don't need to pursue that with that particular production, but maybe we need like non-toxic EPA approved cleaning solutions, or maybe, you know, whatever it looks like for that particular department and their needs. We start to do all the research to get the procurement lined up. And then we also make sure that we have that eco PA, our eco production assistant, staffed and trained and ready to go. And that person is a really crucial role because they're really like the face of Earth Angel to the shooting crew. So these are people who need to be able to work really long hours on a set, but who are also passionate about sustainability and, you know, are there as a resource to educate, to work with our food recovery partners and liaise so that after every crew lunch, that food is packaged and passed along to our volunteers to recover the food and so forth. So there's a lot of moving parts that go into it, but essentially, you know, we take that framework of our four S's. We do a ton of work during pre-production so that then hopefully once the film starts to actually shoot, it's really about maintaining those processes, smoothing out any kinks. You know, we'll get all types of curveballs thrown at us. You know, we'll have scenes where there's 500 background extras, right? We have to now deal with that all of a sudden, or whatever curveballs come to us, we have to then troubleshoot. And then once the film is wrapped and we're in post-production, we really look to, okay, how are we going to recover as much material as possible? We work with the production to donate a lot of their assets. If it's not a series that's, you know, they're going to go into storage and hold things for future seasons, where does all the material go? Props, set decoration, wardrobe. So we help repurpose those items. And then we do all the reporting and analysis at the end.
That's fantastic. And just this conversation is making me so nostalgic. I was really, you know, I mean, I really had this, in a way, an existential crisis because it bothered me a significant amount to be contributing so much to pollution, to, you know, plastic in the landfills. And I mean, there were many other things about the film industry that really wound up making me leave or, you know, making me make that choice to leave. But if there were companies around like you when I was back in film, I would have stayed, absolutely, hands down. I'm so in admiration for the work that you all do. And I think, you know, especially in times like these with a global pandemic, and a lot of people who are not used to being at home all day are home all day. And we want to be able to immerse ourselves in these stories that just take us away from our everyday lives for, you know, an hour or two at a time. And, you know, I think while a lot of people feel perhaps like production, film production, theater production, television production aren't necessarily essential, and I understand, you know, on the one hand that's totally true, it's the things that like that keep us feeling alive and connected and make us be able to laugh and take us away from whatever that we're going through on a day-to-day basis. It's so important to be able to just be happy in that moment. And sometimes television and sometimes watching a movie is like the only thing that can do it. And I remember when, you know, COVID was first, you know, happening and all the chaos in Los Angeles where I lived at the time, pretty much all of my friends lost their jobs overnight. You know, it was a really sad situation, but I know that Earth Angel has a specific protocol now in place that is specifically for COVID, and you have a COVID response, and that's in the books, and it has changed the way that you do business. If someone is interested in working with you all, say in the next year, are there some things that they should keep in mind? Are there things specifically regarding COVID that, you know, maybe they weren't thinking about necessarily greening their set, but they're really trying to figure out how to go about business and maybe, you know, get this production going, something that's been on hold for the last 10 or 12 months? How do they move forward? And is that something that you can help them do?
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, first of all, thank you for your kind words. It's very generous of you. And, you know, certainly when the sort of massive production shutdown happened, it was very concerning for us for a lot of reasons, because we knew that sustainability is still something that is considered a back burner issue for our industry. You know, it's like, if we have the time and resources, yeah, we'll get around to it.
Yeah.
And not really having the understanding and the urgency that, you know, hey, if we don't have a habitable planet, we don't have an industry, right? Like, still lacking those sort of connecting of dots. And our biggest concern was we were like, wow, shooting films and television series was really hard before a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Now it's even harder. And production managers and producers are going to have so much more on their plates and on their minds to deal with. Like, are we going to just totally backslide here? You know, that was our big concern. So, you know, my entire team, and so grateful for my innovative creative team here, because essentially what we did was we got to work really brainstorming, okay, well, how can we adapt our solution so that we can like be both, you know, COVID response strategy as well as sustainability? Like, how can we almost like Trojan horse sustainability, right? Through the eyes of COVID response. And so we got to work creating our clean and green package. And essentially what it is, there's a huge demand for productions now need entire health and safety teams, departments, managing the, you know, testing protocols and all sorts of elements now. So we said, well, what if our, because several producers approached us and they were kind of like, you guys were sort of already the sanitation department of the sets before, like, would you consider kind of adapting to this? And we were like, well, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
So we brought on Ariel Lawrence, who we're calling our eco health and safety specialist. So she was working with us already in with our productions in Atlanta, but she had a whole public health background. And so we redesigned our eco PA training program to also encompass the set safety sanitization aspects, so that we were like, hey, our eco PAs can double as COVID PAs and sustainability PAs, you know, so that we have, and now because there's all of these zoning requirements, like if you're an actor or anyone who needs to be in close contact with actors, you're zone A, and then like everybody else is zone B, basically. Mm-hmm. So we were like, we need different people covering different zones so that there's no bleeding of zone crossing and so forth. So we were like, if we just have these sort of like hybrid roles and think of this as a combined environmental health and safety approach, what if we kind of fuse those things together? So that was part one of it. And then part two of it was we created this network of vendor partners, because, you know, there's so many different vendors that have tailored their businesses to our industry. And we knew all of them had to make these adaptations. So we worked with equipment house, you know, rental companies who were creating like state-of-the-art custom hand washing stations, like mm-hmm. mobile hand washing stations. We're like, oh, all of a sudden we need this thing now, like got to build it. you know, like that's how our industry functions. We're like, oh, we need this thing. Okay, let's build it. And so, you know, getting those types of products on and like working out discounts so that, you know, we're also having like, again, non-toxic EPA approved kind of cleaning solutions involved with that. All of the disinfecting companies that now were springing up, we worked with them, to the aluminum bottled water companies to stay away from single use plastics. But we still knew that people really wanted single use options because of COVID. To now everything in catering and crafty had to be prepackaged boxed. And so we needed different types of compostable containers than we were using before, because they had to withstand hours under a heat lamp mm-hmm, versus mm-hmm. just coming to a buffet line now, you know, so
yeah,
all of these new things kind of came up and we were like, we need product solutions. So we built this network of vendor partners. We worked with them to say like, hey, will you provide discounts to these shows? So the productions are getting an added value out of having these products, you know, that are more sustainable, having the oversight of people who are trained on set safety and sustainability to really kind of, you know, create this joint approach, essentially.
Excellent. Excellent. Wow. I really had no idea. I mean, like I said, you know, 10 years ago, I was, gosh, I'm older than I realize. More than 10 years ago. It's like, there's gotta be a solution for these things. But I mean, you all have clearly, what year were you founded, by the way?
2013.
Wow. Amazing. Amazing. And I mean, clearly there are lots of vendors that you all work with that would not necessarily be on the radar of a production that's not trying to have a more sustainable set. what types of vendors would you be looking for, perhaps, if you were to partner with someone, say, outside of Atlanta or Los Angeles or New York, where you already kind of have your team built up? If you were, say, to start in a new city, what type of vendors would you be looking to partner with so that people that are listening can kind of either keep their ears open as a business owner or people that they know that might want to reach out to you and say, how can I get involved in something like this in the city that I'm currently in? Or I'm in a city where you already have an office. You know, let me know if there are any productions that might need my services. What might you be looking for?
Absolutely. Great question. Yeah. A lot of what we do in the vendor realm and sourcing and procurement realm is, A, how do we get existing production vendors to be more sustainable? Mm-hmm. But also B, how do we get sustainable products that maybe aren't accessing the film industry yet access to the film industry? So it's a great question. And so, you know, if we're starting out brand new in a new city, one of the first types of vendors we're going to go to are waste hauling companies and providers. You know, who's going to service our compost and our organics, and who can collect our recyclables? And we actually already have a great relationship with one of your other guests, TerraCycle. Yeah. So we're doing a lot with TerraCycle right now. All of our shows are doing PPE recycling with TerraCycle at the moment. And
fantastic. Yeah.
And then pre-pandemic too, we were using them for things like the discarded makeup products and mm-hmm. things like that on set. So we've always been longtime fans of theirs and work with them wherever we can. But yeah, anything in the kind of waste removal category is always something we're looking to. Another category that we always try to find local solutions for is, of course, water. You know, we have to bring in all types of different water dispensers to try to avoid packaged, you know, single-use packaged options. So can we be getting that locally rather than through, let's say, a Nestle situation mm-hmm. or whatever? Yep. And we work with a lot of different like water dispenser kind of companies, especially now everything has to be touchless.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had to sort of look for a lot of different sources for that. Our industry is also one that loves to rent things where they can avoid buying and they can rent equipment. That's always a big plus because, again, we don't last very long traditionally, unless we're talking about, you know, a series that's going on for 7 or 8 seasons. They might make that investment. But otherwise, we really like to rent things. Lumber, as I mentioned, that's a big one for our construction, hardware supplies, paints for all of the scenicking of the sets and so forth. We work a lot, too, with if there aren't like existing prop houses in different areas, if there are like antique stores or whatever that they can, art directors and prop masters and so forth, set dressers rather, I mean, can be sourcing those types of like, you know, really beautiful custom items to suit whatever obviously the vision of the particular production is. So cleaning supplies is a big thing. Every department uses them, whether that's like wardrobe and their, you know, laundry detergents or whatever the caterers are using to dishwash, you know, like we just use all types of products like that as well. So yeah, there's so many different things. We could have a whole, I think, episode just on all the different things that production buys, because yes, we buy absolutely. A lot of things.
Wow. Well, if you are a production manager, if you are a producer and you want to get in touch with the Earth Angel team, or at least pick Emily's brain and you know, get some consulting, because there are shoots happening all over the country, all over the world. And so maybe people might want to contact you if they're not in a city that you service, just to, you know, schedule a couple hours with you all to get some tips about how they can make their sets more sustainable. You can also learn about their clean and green service for the COVID response service package by heading over to earthangel.nyc. Again, that's earthangel.nyc. And you can also get in touch with them on Facebook, Twitter, and on Instagram, all Earth Angel Sets on all three of those platforms. So before we head on into our 7 sustainable questions, let's hear a word from our sponsor.
Hey, Sustainable Minds. Have you ever used a product for years and years, and at some point, just randomly, the food tastes different, the packaging seems less safe and questionably recyclable, or maybe a beauty and hair care product that you've been using since before you can even remember, all of a sudden you're having crazy reactions and it takes you forever to figure out exactly what's causing the problem. Well, this is exactly what happened to me about 10 years ago. I had been using the exact same hair care line for quite a while, and all of a sudden I was having pretty severe reactions. What was happening on my head caused me to back out of meetings and social outings. I wasn't going on dates because I was always worried about what my hair and my scalp was going to look like. It was actually really embarrassing and quite a painful experience that I went through for literally years. I wound up cutting my hair short after the fact, which was a good thing for many other reasons as well. I love my new hairstyle. People that I've known for years can't believe that I had worn it down past my shoulders for so long because they absolutely love my new style. And also, I don't have to worry about what my hair looks like when I take a swim in the ocean, which is one of my favorite things to do when I visit the beach. Last week, we talked to Ben Hudgens of Novak Hair Studios, and one thing that we discussed in that conversation was how sometimes the ingredients in our favorite products can change randomly, and he talks about why that happens. Ben is also a wealth of knowledge when it comes to some of the technology helping to reduce the environmental impact of the hair care and styling industry. And if you're not so much into the whole beauty conversation, he's also a great wealth of knowledge when it comes to how to run a sustainable business that provides really any kind of service for people in the community. Check out my conversation with Ben Novak Hudgens of Novak Hair Studios in episode 83 of A Sustainable Mind, and learn more about Novak Studios and their mission statement at novakstudios.com. Now, let's get back to our 7 sustainable questions.
So, Emily, do you have one long-standing habit that you believe has significantly improved your life that you can share with us?
I think probably the biggest long-standing habit that I've had throughout my life that has kept me centered is journaling, to be honest. Just some place where I can get my thoughts out of my head and work through them, I think has been so important for me, especially as an entrepreneur, as a social impact entrepreneur. Because there are just so many economic forces against these models succeeding, and where you can kind of get your brain into a space of, yes, these forces exist. Yes, there's a way, and there's a lot of incredible entrepreneurs and change makers out there paving that way, and you know, really hold steadfast in your belief that another future is possible. Mm-hmm. I think that's, it's just so important for like mental health to cultivate that mindset and not get bogged down in the, this is impossible, this will never happen.
Yeah, absolutely. And I was just talking to a good friend just yesterday about the positive impact of journaling, really being able to kind of, you know, have a, I guess, something that you can look back at and say, this is how far we've come. And this is, mm-hmm. these are all of the places and wonderful things that I want to be able to do in the future. And sometimes you forget, life is long, and, you know, writing it all down in a journal can really help us be better, just more reflective of mm-hmm. who we used to be and all of the improvements that we've made in our life thus far. Do you have one new habit that you're cultivating in your life right now?
I am really actively trying to cultivate a daily meditation practice. Mm-hmm. It's always been really hard for me as a workaholic to give myself that kind of space and time, but I'm finding guided meditations and different podcasts to be really helpful for me. But yeah, I think it's such a powerful tool, and I'm really, really trying to nail down that habit.
And while we're still on the topic of habits, do you have one small suggestion that you can give to producers and production managers out there, something that would be easily tweaked on set, kind of, you know, just over the course of a couple of days, that would really impact a set, that can kind of not just change the environmental impact of the set, but also begin to change the mindset of the people that are there? And this can also apply for not just productions like film and TV productions, but also volunteer events or other live events. Do you have one suggestion in terms of one habit that can maybe be changed and implemented easily?
That's a great question. I would say one thing I try to encourage anyone from a decision-making sort of has authority in production landscape is to ask the question whenever they're hiring. You know, if you're hiring your production designer, if you're hiring your first AD, whoever that is, ask them the question of how is your work style going to contribute to this being a sustainable production? Mm-hmm. Because again, it isn't, nothing in production gets done because of one person, one single human being. It really does take a village. And I think where producers and production managers can empower heads of department to think about this and to prioritize this, I think that empowerment is what leads to, okay, the entire art directing team is now going to try to design for reuse for mm-hmm. every single production, you know, every single set that's designed, or, you know, the gaffer is now going to prioritize 100% LED lighting package, you know? So these are the types of things that I think decision makers can really embolden and empower the actual, you know, integration of these things on the day to day.
That's fantastic. And Earth Angel has certainly made significant, very significant impacts. And I'm so sorry, I totally glossed over that. I want to actually dive in a little bit into the stats here at the end. But before we get to that, there are so many people out there doing amazing work in environmental sustainability. Whose work specifically do you admire?
Oh my gosh, another really hard one.
I mean, if you really want to narrow it down, somebody that's doing amazing work in film in your same area, that's obviously not you guys, but you know, because when I ask this question, people give me like the same 15 names. So you can feel free to put something out there that none of us would have heard of because we're just not in that industry.
So one of the environmental publications or what, I'm not sure what the correct term is, but I really love the work of Amy Westervelt and Mary Hagler and what they've done with Hot Take. It's incredible. And it's part podcast, but it's also like a subscription newsletter. They just have this really wonderful approach of just like, nope, we don't have any time to waste. Let's tell it like it is. Let's hold people accountable. Let, you know, really get into the truth. Like there's no politicking with their approach to how they, you know, their approach to climate journalism, if mm-hmm. you will. They're just very, very, I think, unfiltered and raw about like, we only have so much time. We need to get to the next level here. And so I love it. I love their takes as women. And it's just really, really wonderful. I love what they're doing.
That is an excellent suggestion. I have heard of Hot Take, and this, as well as any other resource mentioned in today's episode, will be available linked up in the show notes for this episode. So you can look in the description on your device or head on over to asustainablemind.com. But in addition to Hot Take, do you have an internet resource that you find helpful on a regular basis that you think would be beneficial to share with our listeners?
In the entertainment space, I would definitely say, like, if I just want to plug them really quick too, because that they're a great resource, but greenproductionguide.com mm-hmm. is sort of like our North American hub for information and resources on sustainable production. So anyone who just kind of wants like primers on this is what sustainable production is and basic like tools, and like that's a great, great free resource. So I definitely want to put that out there into the universe. And then I would say beyond that, I mean, I just really try to pay attention to lots of different climate journalism. Like I read The Guardian, I really like Earther, I really like, you know, lots of these just like very specific outlets that are talking about climate issues, I think are just so important because, as we know, like the mainstream media has not given this the attention that it deserves.
Absolutely. Totally agree on that front for sure. What is one book that you would recommend to sustainable minds out there, audiobook or physical book, that people can read when they are hoping to shift their mindset specifically to become the change that they want to see in the world?
So I'll share one book. It's not a particular environmental book, but it really helped me with getting into the meditation habit and just really being a present human being in nature. And it's called The Book of Awakening by Mark Nepo. It's a daily reader. And so there's like beautiful passages, a lot of which are about, you know, us finding our own sort of like peace and serenity within nature, but also then specific meditation prompts to go along with it. And I find that these sorts of bite-sized nuggets of wisdom can sometimes be really like a lot more palatable for folks to take in and then again, reflect on like, how am I embodying these principles in my work life, in my personal life, in whatever that looks like. And so I think that for me as someone who, again, you know, as an entrepreneur and trying to change culture, you know, me having a sense of awareness within myself and what it is that I'm trying to achieve in this external initiative that I've built has been so powerful and grounding for me as an individual. So yeah, again, not exactly environmental related, but has helped me as an environmentalist.
Excellent. And again, this will all be linked in the show notes. So I do want to end on a fairly fun note here with our 7 sustainable questions before we get into our parting words. If you were to be any piece of film equipment, what would you be and why?
I love this question. I think I have to go with the Apple box.
Because
the Apple box,
they're so useful, so versatile,
exactly. I'm like, you will always have need for an Apple box no matter what.
Tell people what an Apple box is, because people are like, I have no idea what this person is talking about.
So an Apple box is literally a wooden box that has like a carved handle on the side of it. It is most frequently used by grips, I would say, in the industry, often electrics as well, though. And it just, they use it for everything. You can use it to have an actor stand on it so that they're like, they have the right height that you're looking for during a shot. You can use it to like prop up different equipment. You can use it as a makeshift table, as a seat, as a like whatever it needs to be. It's just a really, really sturdy wooden box, basically. But it's so useful.
Yes. Yeah. I was between the Apple box and the sandbag. I mean, those are like the two most useful things ever. I remember sitting on, I've used a sandbag so many times just as a seat.
Yep. Exactly.
And I was a grip on many productions and an electric as well. That was probably my favorite job on set when I was first getting started. So I'm bringing back good memories.
Oh yeah. When you've been on your feet for like 12 hours straight and you just see an empty Apple box, it's like a place I can sit. It's great.
Yes, absolutely. So before we close out here, I did want to talk about the impact of Earth Angel. So just take a quick minute to describe, you know, maybe in numbers, the impact of the film industry overall in terms of its impact on the environment. And then also, I know that I mentioned some of these stats in your bio, but just list off to us some of the positive impact that you've had on the productions that you've had a hand in over the years.
Okay, so starting with the impact of the industry at large, there's actually been very few studies released on, you know, greenhouse gas emissions for us as an industry sort of nationally here in the United States, but also globally. So there actually isn't a lot of publicly available data on this issue, which is part of what we try to do. We try to collect that and provide some transparency. But what we do know is that a single New York City-based production often produces more than 300 tons of waste.
Wow.
Holy yep.
Mackerel.
They usually equate to emitting around 1,100 metric tons of greenhouse gases.
Wow.
They typically consume about 52,000 gallons of fuel. And the amount of paper consumed and its lumber and et cetera is often equivalent to about 63 trees being cut down. So it's substantial, is the long and short of it. But some of the metrics that we're really proud of having achieved at Earth Angel. So we have, drum roll, please. These are hot off the presses numbers.
Oh, fantastic.
Including our 2020 numbers, which of course we had fewer productions in 2020, but still the numbers, all numbers matter. So we have now diverted over 1 million pounds of waste from the landfills.
That's freaking fantastic.
Our average diversion rate comes in at about 74% for our shows. We have donated 133,000 meals to the local communities, just through leftover food that would have otherwise been thrown into the landfill.
Yep.
We have avoided over 2.5 million single-use plastic water bottles.
And that's the one.
Yeah.
Man, oh man, that's a big one.
Yeah.
For film sets. Yeah.
We're really proud of that. I remember when we reached the million, we're like, we've avoided 1 million single-use plastic bottles. And now we're at 2.5. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. And as you stated too, we've avoided estimated 8,800 metric tons of CO2 equivalent. And then we have also saved our clients $1.1 million in gross savings over the course of all of our different shows. So,
wow.
Yeah, lots of really exciting numbers we're very proud of.
I absolutely love it. Thank you so much, Emily, for joining us today. Again, if you are interested in getting in touch with Emily and her team, check them out at earthangel.nyc. And again, they have offices in Los Angeles, New York, and Atlanta. But don't let that stop you from getting in touch if you're not in one of those three cities. Anywhere in the country, anywhere in the world, if you want to talk to Emily, I'm sure that they would be happy to work with you if you're not a local production to where they usually work. So go ahead and check them out on the website. Also, social media, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And of course, you can also check out Earth Angel Sustainable Production Services, LLC is the actual business name. They are on LinkedIn.com as that. So Emily, do you have any final words or parting pieces of guidance to give sustainable minds out there?
You know, just that it's been an honor to be here and to be among the Sustainable Mind community. And I'm really inspired by all of the guests that you've had on your show, Marjorie. And for everyone out there, just, you know, fighting the good fight, thank you for your work. And hopefully our paths cross soon when we can all safely see each other. Together, hopefully.
Absolutely. Thanks again.
I hope you've enjoyed this week's episode. If you want to learn more about Emily and Earth Angel, head on over to earthangel.nyc, and you can get this link as well as all of the other resources mentioned in today's episode at asustainablemind.com/084. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll catch you next time on A Sustainable Mind.